Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. You ain't gonna be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourself up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money, and hold that money, and practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for a lead. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor, then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk only control less than 0.035% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad-mouthing you. And O'Reilly. They can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, boy, who cares? March has never changed anything.
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And messed around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I want to know what's in the door. He said, you sure you want to see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you're having is when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt. I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on pity way. Your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad a cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week. 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, "Shoot it!" So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles, the kid no one would pick, was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
All right, today's It's My House is titled, You, the Chin Family, times 200. Or I should have said, You, the Chin Family, times 200 times. Anyway, well, You, the Chin Family, times 200. This was inspired by, I was chatting with a friend of mine this morning who lives in Asia, and she was telling me, you know, she's having a hard time, you know, making ends meet. And one of the things that she needs in her home, or at least she feels she needs, is really for her children. She's got one smartphone, and that smartphone is the family phone. And she's got, I think, at least two children, school-age kids. And in this particular part of Asia, they're not, you know, holding classes within brick and mortars. It's all done remote or distance learning, as some people call it. But it's all done online at this particular point in time. So the classroom instruction, the children, two of them, had in different grades, have to use the phone. And then, you know, they've got homework and all that type of stuff. So she really needs three phones. One for the, you know, the family, so she can get her, you know, necessary calls in as well. And one for each one of her children, okay, because that's the primary lifeline. And that's what a phone is for many of us. It's a lifeline for their schooling. And she was saying she only gets, you know, I think she only has one source of income. And I said, essentially what you need to do is you need to do what the families of Chinese restaurants do. Okay. And she said, well, you know, explain. Well, I said, you've been to a Chinese food restaurant before, you know. She said, yes, plenty of times. I said, well, if you look at the menu of a Chinese food restaurant, first things first, and you know what, I shared this story with a friend of mine here in the United States that he seems like he might have a financial problem at this point in time, too. I said, if you look at the Chinese food menu, she also complained about low wages being paid where she's at in Asia. But I said, now, if you look at the Chinese food menu, and I'm going to use the one that I use. The least expensive item on a Chinese food menu, at least the menu I have, is 75 cents. That's with some crispy noodles. Okay. The most expensive item on the menu, I believe, is $10.95. They have several items that are priced at $10.95. You know, might have something with duck in it or whatever. I think that's the most expensive item, $10.95. In any event. But, now, you're not going to, and typically Chinese food restaurants, particularly carryouts, are family-based businesses where you see different generations all working together. So, I said that the difference between you and we're going to say the Chen family, because Chen is a Chinese name, very common Chinese name. So it's just representative for this illustration I'm giving. The distinction between you and the Chen family is, because let's say if they work for and they're selling egg rolls, well, an egg roll might be $1.25. You know, you got to sell a whole lot of egg rolls to pay a light bill. But the Chen family, the families of Chinese restaurants, they have, at least on the menu I have, they have over 300 different dishes or meals that they can prepare for the public. Over 300. The typical, now as my American friend asked me this morning, because here's a stat I'm putting out there, I said, because this information is right on the internet. I said, the typical restaurant, Chinese restaurant in the United States, and we're talking about a carryout, averages over $111,000 per month gross. Might not look like it, but over $100,000 a month. That's over $1.2 million a year. One location. So I said, I was telling my friend in Asia, I said, Southeast and South, Maritime Southeast Asia. I was saying, you know what? What you need to do is model the Chinese. Now, the Chinese restaurant. Now, you don't, you know, cooking might not be your forte, but whatever your lane is, and we all have a lane, okay, whatever our lane is, we need to take a good hard look about whatever lane that we're in, and we need to come up with how many products can we come up with. Now, let me go back to the Chinese restaurant menu thing. Chinese food restaurants, essentially, you know, like I said, the menu that I have has over 300 items on it. The majority of those items have these basic ingredients: chicken, beef, pork, seafood, rice, and vegetables. Those are the six basic ingredients that they have. And out of those six basic ingredients, they're able to come up with over 300 items to sell. 300 distinct items to sell. So whatever lane that you're in life, like for me, I'm in the housing. That's my thing, okay? I can, well, matter of fact, let me give you a real, like, this is a fresh example. Friday evening, I placed an ad online for a, and matter of fact, let me give you some backstory. I just had some renters that I was renting rooms to, but they used to get in fights and they broke up stuff. So I said, you know what, I don't want to do rooms inside of a house, not at this location. I don't want to do that anymore. So I was getting the thing, and you know, what else could I do? You know, what else is in my lane, okay, that's close at hand? And I think, well, you know what, people go on Airbnb and they rent out backyards. So I said, you know what? And a friend of mine, she used to She running out of her house, and her kids live in the camp in the backyard. So I said, you know what? I got a nice-sized backyard. So I placed an ad for the backyard. And as of, Sunday night, I had probably about 1,900 views and over 30 inquiries, interactive inquiries on it. So I'm thinking, all right, for me to do this Chinese menu style, is because all of, and by the way, people with RVs and campers contacted me. So right now it looks like, because I got a car, I got two carports. I'm going to rent a carport out instead of the backyard, which for me it'll be a better deal anyway because, you know, it's all contained, you know, the camper. So in any event, I'm looking at, you know what? Here's my Chinese food restaurant menu. Okay, I can do rooms inside of houses. I can, or housing. I can do vacant spaces because I've got acres of land where people can go camping. Okay, that's item. Item number one is rooms inside of houses. Item number two would be I can build rooms that are not a part of a house. I can do open spaces for people that want to camp. That's three. I can do parking spaces for people who need parking for cars, for RVs, for campers. Well, that's four. I've also noticed that a lot of people are hunting. I've had several people that called me that want to hunt. You know, I have, and I said, well, I don't know if 4 acres is big enough for hunting. I got to check with the locals on that. And then, but that's five. Then I got people that want to hunt deer. And I got to hang up about that. But anyway, I'm just telling them, but these are my options. You know, they can do bow and arrow hunting with that. That's what, six. So I'm looking at, you know what, let me review. Oh, and then a lot of people that don't want to do off-the-grid type stuff, you know, they're asking for water, and does it have water, does it have power? So, you know, that's seven. So let's say I've got seven items on my menu. Seven items on my menu. Okay. Now, I'm looking at, you know what? Because there are 365 days in a year. Now, if I do, and I do one blog talk a day, Monday through Friday, and that's 20 times in a month on average. Okay. If I do that 20 times in a month, like I do my podcast, you know, one run at a day with one of my seven items on my menu. I got a little short menu, seven items. Okay. Seven items on my menu that I can think of off the top of my head. All right. Then, because you know what, some of these people I talked to gave me some great ideas. So I'm going to stick with a seven-item menu. Okay. But if I do one a day, Monday through Friday, that's 20 people I can help in a month, 20 opportunities to get a paycheck in that month. And if some of that is residual, okay, well, in the course of 10 months, I would have done this 200 times, probably over 200, but bare minimum 200 times. And let's go back, my friend from Maritime Southeast Asia. I said, you need to practice, you need to pick up a philosophy and a practice just like the Chinese food menu. Start off with what you have. You might have just one item, but that's okay. You take that one item and figure out 100 different ways or 200 different ways to market that one particular, you know, you might have to deal with 7 different markets within your hometown, 7 different markets on the internet, whatever way, you got to work that part out on your own. But you can take that one item and figure out how to sell it 200 different times, ideally in a month, or really in a day. One, you know, if you're good at making a hamburger, figure out on how you, because matter of fact, here's one idea right here. If you're good at making hamburgers, apple pies, or whatever, they got all these delivery services now. Uber Eats, Postmates, DoorDash, and then a lot of, you know, Pizza Hut has its own delivery team. A lot of Chinese food restaurants have their own delivery team, and I'm sure other restaurants do also. So figure out a way, whatever your lane might be, whatever your lane might be, start with that one item, and then, you know, it'll come to you on how to develop that product line so you can, because if you can get yourself, I would say try to take yourself over time from one item to at least 100 items. Okay. Now, like I said, with me, I've got 7 items right now. By this time tomorrow, because like I said, I'm not filling it in on land for hunting of any kind. But 7 items that I feel good about. I've already got experience, you know, a lot of experience at rooms and whatever. So it's like I can make rooms. I can make cabins. Just those 2 items alone. And I'm good at placing a good ad. Because I have to take that first ad. Now, I got 2 ads running right now. And I've been getting probably 2 to 4 inquiries per hour since, man, for the last 4 or 5 hours. As soon as I answer 1 or 2 people, then I get 2 or 3 more. Is it available? Is it available? Is it available? That's going on for the last 4 or 5 hours with me. Not complaining. Okay. So if you're in a financial bind right now, if you're struggling right now, if you feel no, it's not the low wages, people. Okay, is that you're trying to milk 1, 2, 3, or 4 paychecks? Because you got couples out here. The man's working 2 jobs. The wife's working 2 jobs. They got 4 paychecks, and they're still struggling. Now, bare minimum, if you can, I mean. Some people can work a job, that's fine. The Ozzie and Harriet method where the man can, you know, the man's the breadwinner and from that one paycheck, he can come home and Ozzie can, or June Cleaver can dress well with, serve you cupcakes with pearls on. No. Those days are done. There might be some people out there like that. Some people that might have an engineering job or something like that or medical, you know, but overall, on average, I'm saying that I'm suggesting, I'm doing it for myself at least. Start with what you're good at and then work on developing it into at least 100 different items. If you are a guitar teacher, okay, selling lessons is one way, but why not sell guitars, profit center? You can also rent guitars. That's another profit center. You're up to three. What's the component parts of a guitar? You can sell strings. That's four items. You can sell the frets. That's five items. You can sell the body. That's six items. Just the component parts. All right? If it's an electric guitar, the knobs on it, seven. It's got to be painted, eight. Those are eight income streams for a guitar teacher. So you can do this with anything. Cupcakes. You can bake cupcakes. You can bake different type of cupcakes. That's two. You can do catering. Three, you can do birthday parties. Four, you can do corporate part. Five, those are five different items that you can earn money off of just on cupcakes. You can do this with anything. So what I'm saying is start with one, have a goal of at least 100 to 200, but you're not trying to get them all at one time. Start off with what you have and just duplicate it. I mean, there's several ways you can do it. You can, you know, you can bake some really good cupcakes. Let's say you're in Detroit. All right. You know what? This is how Colonel Sanders did it. Colonel Sanders made some good fried chicken. Now, the thing is, there are people out here that make better chicken than he did. There are people out here that make better chicken than Popeyes or any kind of fast food chicken that you might think of. There are scores of people that make better tasting chicken. But the distinction is, with Colonel Sanders in this example, Colonel Sanders decided to make, you know what, well, let me open up another location. Same recipe, same chicken, but he moved it, I mean, he duplicated himself in another location. In another location, and until it got into the hundreds, into the thousands. Just with fried chicken and biscuits and mashed potatoes. And then he has a menu, because with that chicken and biscuits and mashed potato and gravy and whatever you want with it, you know, well, let's count the paychecks. You can buy it by the bucket. That's one. You can buy it by the barrel. That's two. Well, you can get a two-piece. You can get a three-piece. Okay. There's sides. Corn, mashed potatoes and gravy. Potato wedges to what, seven? Do you want it rotisserie? Do you want it extra crunchy? That's nine. You know, do you want dessert? That's ten. That's ten. He's got more than ten items. But ten items, all springing from one item, which is fried chicken. All right. And then, you know, then, like I said, you can apply this to anything. Bikes, because like I said, with the Chinese food menu thing, there are over 100 to 300 items on it, but the component parts of most of what they're selling is from chicken, beef, pork, seafood, rice, vegetables. That's it. Teeny weeny little bit of imagination. You know, they make it into different dishes. I mean, there's Kung Pao chicken. There's chicken chop suey. There's orange chicken. There's sesame chicken. You know, chicken fried rice. That's what I named five or six dishes right there just with chicken. And they have more than that. You can do the same thing. So if you're struggling right now, if you got a serious financial problem, start with one item. As Robin says on here, tells me often, start with or work with what you have. Don't get caught up in what you don't have. Work with what you have. And then as you work it, the opportunities will pop up. And that's all being part on, you know, on Faith Street. I place those ads, man, and I got ads running now. I call them Faith Street ads, but I'm picking up ideas and opportunities and strategies that I wouldn't have picked up had I not placed those ads. Okay? Anybody can do this. Like, for me, I got to settle my mother's estate. It's a sizable, it's a good chunks of money. But you know what? If I continue to place the ads like I placed on Friday and I placed yesterday about this time, because I got two ads running right now, but I need to tweak them. Because, once again, I don't want to deal with hunters or nothing like that. I need to tweak them. Actually, you know what? All I need to do is basically just keep on doing the ad that I did Friday. Just do that every day. I mean, Monday through Friday, run it 20 times a month, and I do it and do it for 10 consecutive months, and meet with at least one person a day that's ready to buy. Because I met with a person last night. I got to close on him now. He says he's ready, but you know, until you don't count your chickens until they hatch. So it's not a deal until it's a deal. Okay. But if I do that Monday through, like I've been doing Blog Talk for almost 8 years now, within 10 months, I'll have her whole estate paid for, done with a surplus. So that's the path I'm on. Using it, and my Chinese menu has just got 7 items. That's it. That's it. That's what I got access to right now, 7 items. 425, your mic is open.
Hello, everybody.
Good morning.
Yeah, it's important to start with what you have. You might feel like you have nothing to work with, but I guarantee you, you have something. Even when I was homeless, I didn't possess anything, but I used to walk past a woman who would be working in her yard, right? And so I would say, hey, can I help you? Do you need some help? And she was mean to me, and she would say, no, you don't leave me alone. So I just stopped asking her. And I just sat down next to her and started picking up leaves, sweeping, whatever. So she, after a while, she gives me half a sandwich. One time she gave me a couple of dollars. Then I realized I created a job for myself. Okay? I picked up her broom, her tools, and just by helping her out, I actually created a job for myself. So instead of waiting for an opportunity to fill out an application or someone to tell me about a job, I looked and I used what I have. Didn't think I had anything, but I had a lady who owned a house, who owned a broom, who owned blah, blah, blah. And
right.
I just positioned myself and with a dialogue. So, and that's all it takes. So don't wait to get st-
stuff because you'll never get started. You'll be stuck. Oh, I got to get the money. Oh, I got to get the time. Oh, I got to get the materials. Just start
right.
with what you have. Get started, and then everything will begin to come to fruition. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah.
No, that's true. Just work with what you got.
Yeah, I have a call I have to take. I'll be right back.
Okay. All right, while Robin's
all
taking
right.
that call, what we're going to do is we're going to play Ballin' on Baltic Street. I want you to listen closely to it.
Before I get started with this video, I just want to personally thank the brother Fred Hassan Powell of the Morale Facebook page for sharing this social political cartoon, which is currently displayed in this video. I always big up brothers who are artists like him, my man Will James, Alex K. Art, Chris Miller, and others, because their pictures speak volumes. They don't have to say one word because, as they say, a picture is worth a thousand words. In fact, I want y'all to take a good look at this picture, which shows a brother with his hat flipped to the back telling the bald-headed brother that he's hungry as fuck. When the brother attempts to hand him his own fishing rod so he can get some fish on his own, he gets verbally assaulted. No, nigga, I want some fish. Fuck out of here with that coon shit. I mean, if you look closer, you'll see that the brother that says he's hungry got a fresh pair of Jordans on his feet. And once again, I want to thank you, Fred, for sharing that photo because it is a perfect warm-up for what I'm getting ready to bring up next. Look, last week, I had to stop past a gas station, and when I went in, I took a quick glance over to the newsstand, and I saw the Washington Post. The first thing that caught my eye was something that you normally don't see on the cover of a newspaper, which was a few straggling pants sagging brothers sitting on a stoop of a building outside. I didn't have the time to read the paper in the gas station because I had to fly, but I checked the article online when I got home, and I was just flabbergasted. I want you all to check it out for yourself in the description box. It is the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, and the front cover story is a look back at the riots which took place in Baltimore this past April following the death of Freddie Gray. The Post took the time to interview a few of the residents and get their personal take on how things have been and has any positive change comes to the streets of Baltimore after the riots. And one of the brothers that they interviewed was a young man that was out there on the streets peddling drugs from time to time, and he stated that he ended up finding out shortly after the riots that there were a few storefront apartments that were up for sale and that they were only selling for just $5,000 a piece. He then said that when he ran the idea of getting together and investing in the neighborhood past several brothers that he was out there selling drugs with on the streets, all of them told him no. And see, this goes to what brothers like myself, Sean James, and many others who are right here on YouTube have been telling y'all about this modern Negro. Okay, this Baltimore brother that was interviewed by the Washington Post had a great idea and the right frame of mind to purchase this storefront property while the price is extremely low. But the rest of the Negroes that are around him ended up dragging him into the quagmire of apathy that surrounds the Negro landscape.
She a dude. She just hit you in your face. She a dude. That bitch scared, nigga. Oh. Beat her motherfucking ass. She feel like you a motherfucking nigga. Beat her motherfucking ass.
That nigga can't. That nigga hurting himself.
You from New State.
It's over. Everybody get the fuck out of here.
Man, fuck it. Let's go across the street.
I ain't caught it. I'll slap the fuck out of one of y'all.
Real quick. Just like this. What a child.
Look, the main spot that this brother was looking to purchase had five rooms between both of the upstairs levels, and it just needed a little bit of furnishing. These spots could have easily been rented out to tenants or used as cheap housing by family and friends that could have worked a legitimate business out of that storefront. The Negro just don't get it, because the more legitimate storefronts, strip mall shops, apartments and tenements you own would lessen the police targeting you, because then you can do what the foreigners and white folks that own these places do, which is hire the police to work security at your properties and places of business. Why do you think they don't go upside the heads of these foreigners? Because they step to the police officers and let them know that they have work for them. These foreigners and white folks that own and run these storefronts hire the cops, and if they don't pay them with cash, they give them free merchandise and meals on the house, so they in turn look out for them. And half these cops do moonlighting security at these places even when they are on duty, because all they got to do most of the time is just drive through with a squad car or do a quick foot patrol right near the business or apartment housing units that are being rented out. This is why they don't give the Chan family or any Chinese youngster any problems when they see them in the hood by their dry cleaners. This is why they don't bother Mr. or Mrs. Akbar or any Arab kids that they see near the gas stations they own. This is why they don't mess with Miss Yee or any of her grandkids that are close to the nail salon she owns, because they take a small percentage of the proceeds and pad the local policeman's pockets. And see, your typical foolish Negro that would challenge what I just told you will say, well, see, you insinuating that we got to bribe the police for them to stop brutalizing us. But they, like most, don't know anything about capitalism. It is a game of economic musical chairs. I just gave you the analogy when I mentioned all the foreign families that own all the storefronts, strip malls, and rental properties. Who is the only one who is left standing up with no businesses or property to speak of when the music is done playing and the cops roll through the neighborhood? That's us, yapping back and forth when the music stops and they tell our loitering asses to get moving or catch a bruising. That's us, walking around with sagging pants and glow-in-the-dark fluorescent color wigs like this sister that you see right here tossing rocks during the riot last April. Now, she's throwing rocks and expressing her anger and frustration, but she has a fresh weave on top of her head, which helped pay some of the officers that broke Freddie Gray's back. So who is the sellout and coon, black folks? And think about it. If you own some of those storefronts and control the flow of unlaundered, legitimate-made currency that comes through those areas, you can do your illegal dirt all day long without that much harassment from the local authorities. You might draw attention from a few alphabet gang organizations, like the DEA, FBI, and others, but the local guys aren't going to pay that much attention because you're helping them pay bills and you're putting food in their stomach. And since I brought up the subject of illegal activity and you pants-sagging clowns love to talk about how gangster you are, why don't you do what some of the Irish, Italian, Jewish, and Polish immigrants your dumbass keeps trying to emulate did by legitimizing some of your hustles and using the same police force that chases you around the neighborhood as a shield. See, most Negroes will try to tell you that we are always at the end of a nightstick, a baton, or getting showered with bullets just because we are black. But ask yourself a question. Why aren't that many Ethiopians and West Africans getting mollywopped and punished to the extent that many so-called African Americans are in the U.S.? Remember, they're just as black and sometimes way darker than us. But why are there fewer cases of them being brutalized and killed by the police like we saw with Amadou Diallo or Abner Louima, both of which took place in New York? Why so few cases compared to us so-called Afro-Americans? It's because they're smart enough to own businesses, restaurants, furniture stores, parking lots, etc., and pay the cops to look the other way so their fellow countrymen aren't harmed in any way. That's the logical thing to do. But you can't tell this Negro from America that, because you're still living off the backwards principle and creed of entitlement, which these liberals drafted up for us long ago. Instead of assessing this situation from a global perspective and seeing that everyone else seems to be purchasing everything around us so they can live comfortable lives and keep us at a position of marginalization as opposed to putting themselves in that boat, the Negro man and woman in the U.S. will counter it by saying, see, I object because my tax dollars pay for the police not to harass me. No, they don't, you imbecile. Especially after Uncle Sam rapes their paycheck just like he rapes everybody else's. Now, your pro-WAC movement pseudo-black nationalist leaders will call me a coon for telling you this, but this is something that they know firsthand. They also know that you more than likely won't view this phenomenon from all angles because you're still under the influence of the can't we all just get along flavor Kool-Aid most black folks drank after the post-Civil Rights Movement era, thinking that all the bigotry-enhanced physical assaults and beatdowns we took during chattel slavery and Jim Crow had an exclusive cutoff date to them, which is why every single year one of these highly publicized police brutality incidents takes place. There's some dumb Negro that says, I don't believe that in 2087 this is still happening to black people. Yeah, it is. And it's going to keep on happening in 2088 if you don't adopt a different way of thinking, dummy. Your pseudo-black nationalists won't tell you that you are mostly to blame for this continually happening because they want you to keep feeling sorry for yourself and attend more lectures and debates where they argue over whether or not a woman is God or which master teacher's philosophy is better to follow. But I'm here to tell you right now, black folks, that we don't need to attend a gazillion seminars, travel with a million other jugheads to commemorate the anniversary of a march that never led to mass black improvement, or study the teachings of some philosophical doctor with 10 degrees to find a solution to our problem. This brilliant brother from Baltimore that was interviewed in the December 9th edition of the Washington Post, who more than likely didn't even finish high school, just gave us the answer. And if you're wondering why I titled this thing Ballin' on Baltic Avenue, I did so as a way of saluting one of my grandfathers. See, long ago when I was a very little boy, he taught me how to play Monopoly. I was about 7 years old, and I was all geeked up racing around the board to buy Boardwalk and Park Place. And he said, go right on ahead. He let me do it and said, I'll just buy a Baltic, Mediterranean, Oriental, and all these other properties that you aren't even thinking about. So as the game went on, and I only owned Boardwalk, Park Place, and Pacific, I think, he had all the other properties, the railroads, the waterworks, the electric company, and a whole bunch of hotels and houses on all of them while I was looking silly. And I ended up having to sell what I owned and wait for that $200 paycheck once I passed go. Once it finally set in that I lost the game, he chuckled and told me, son, you got to own what's in the ghetto before you walk around the block. And that lesson that my grandfather Dave, rest his soul, taught me still applies to this very day. Ownership is a universal language, no matter what culture or ethnicity you come from, because it regulates the sort of relationship you're going to have with most of the people around you.
right, today's podcast is titled You, the Chin Family Times 200. And we're talking about finding one thing and doing it 200 times. Hopefully in a month. Well, some of you eventually in a week. But anyway, to start off with something. All right, just a little trending news here. Yesterday, I don't know how many of you experienced it. I did. It you know what happened starting during this podcast yesterday? I was in the process of most of the podcasts of placing at least two ads. And as soon as I finished posting them, Facebook, I got kicked off Facebook. I said, wait a minute. Now, I thought it was something in the answer that I wrote. Because it looked like I had gotten kicked. I mean, I got kicked. I was in not only Facebook deal, but kicked. I mean, it just went the screen on my laptop, when you got to Facebook, was like zero, nothing. You know, you can go to some other sites, but Facebook, nothing. So I went to my phone, and it wasn't much better with that. And then something later told me, you know, check with my provider, because I kept on getting messages back when I tried to get on to Facebook. Because like I said, I just placed these ads, and I wasn't getting any response at all. But Facebook was down. So I thought, all right, well, let me call my provider. So I called my provider, and they said, well, they were experiencing internet problems, you know, system-wide, locally here where I'm at. So about 3 or 4 hours later, then I looked on YouTube, and there was a news report that Facebook had outages all day. And then I later found out that not only Facebook, but Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp app had outages throughout the day. T-Mobile also had outages. And there were probably other local providers around the country that had internet outages too. So that was what was happening yesterday around this neck of the woods. Facebook probably went back online about 7:30, 8 p.m. last night. I mean, when it got regular again. And then I started, like, early this morning, I started getting ads, I mean, responses to ads. But in any event, so some of the trending news right now, Facebook, wait a minute. Facebook whistleblower testifies, let's see, just in Facebook, let me put this on, okay. Facebook whistleblower says platform harms children. Zuckerberg could make it safer, but won't. That's the opinion of this particular whistleblower that went on 60 Minutes, and I got my thoughts about her. But that's another story. Let's see what else is. Let's see. They had a whole bunch of okay, well, whistleblower again. So what are your thoughts on what happened yesterday? Some people might not have noticed it. If you were around other part of the globe from where we are, in this part of the Western world, you could have probably slept all through it and not noticed anything. But I noticed it. So as well as you may as well say millions of others. So if you got any comments, 619-768-2945. But the main thing I want to put out to you guys that might be having a bit of a financial thing going on. Oh, you know, matter of fact, let me play this audio because this is one of my profit centers. And 314, we're going to come to you in a minute. Wait a minute. Yeah. We're going to play this two-minute clip. This one, I'm going to tell you how this clip manifested for me over the weekend and last night as well.
Also tonight, the incredible transformation and the Buffalo Strong spirit that made it all happen. 7 Eyewitness News reporter Taylor Epps shows us how a young lady has completed her very own renovation project.
11-year-old Lauren Nelson had big plans for her summer.
I thought it was going to be pretty fun, but with COVID going on, it was going to be not as fun as it could be.
But things changed one day when she was flipping through an American Girl doll magazine at her home in Attica.
And she showed us a $650 VW bus. My husband was like, that's ridiculous. You could buy your own camper for that price.
So she did just that. Lauren saved some money and started looking. A neighbor just down the road had this 20-foot camper that caught her eye.
And then the one day, up popped a for sale sign, and she squealed the whole way home,
and she started negotiating.
It wasn't very hard. He said $500, and I said $400 because that was the money that I had in my bank account, and he said sold.
Then it was time to renovate.
It was a process. We brought home a family of mice. And so there was a lot of deep cleaning,
but that didn't stop her.
I was very motivated because I really wanted a place where I could just, like, hang out like my own house.
The whole renovation process took Lauren about 2 months, and with the help of family and friends, she was able to turn this into this.
It's called Camp Hygge. It means very comfortable and safe. It has its own kitchen and bathroom, so it's like a tiny house.
So now you're the owner of a tiny home at 11 years old.
Yes.
The whole project cost her $800.
She has 3 envelopes that she puts her money in, give, save, and spend. I think she made a really good choice. She now says she's part of the tiny home nation.
She was able to turn her summer around and hopes to inspire others to do the same.
Which is awesome to see that somebody who's 11 years old had her own vision but now is out there and other people are contacting us and they've gone out and bought a camper to do the same thing. If you're looking to have some big plans in the future, you should go out and do it. Make it happen.
In Attica, Taylor Epps, 7 Eyewitness News.
Okay, so I placed the ad Friday just for a backyard. Long story short, after, like I said, my last count was over 1,900 views, over 30 interactions that I interacted with people with just this weekend. And I placed 2 ads yesterday, so since early this morning I've been fielding those calls. But Saturday I talked to a lady that she's looking for a new place to put her camper. And she bought hers for $500. So we would chop it up a little bit, and she sent me 2 pictures and information on 2 other campers that were for sale. One for $1,200, I think the other one's for $1,500. And I was supposed to meet her yesterday, but with and somebody's calling me now. But this call isn't a business call, so I'll let that go. In any event, we were supposed to meet, but I guess she changed her mind or whatever. But I'm going to keep her. I'm going to stay in contact with her for social capital because she knows how to bargain hunt. Like I said, she bought the home that she lives in for $500, okay? And there's a whole bunch of people. I would say that 20% of the United States, I found this statistic out from a friend of mine who does mobile homes, has a household income of no more than $20,000 a year, okay? So a lot of those people, they're not living in $100,000 homes. They're not living in $50,000 homes. You know, they're the bottom of the pyramid, And there's a book written by a guy, I forgot the dude's name, ran on the tip of my tongue. He's passed over. But the book is called Wealth at the Bottom of the Pyramid. Now, he was from India, I believe, or Pakistan, one of the two. Prahalad. What was his name? C.F. was Prahalad was his professor. I'll call him Professor Prahalad. He wrote a book called The Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid. Well, and he was talking about it from a global perspective using a lot of developing country examples. But there's a fortune at the bottom of the pyramid here in the United States. And because the bottom of the pyramid, the base, the foundation is wide. And everything is built off that till you get to the top. So I'm looking at what Laura Nelson did, bought that camper for $400. That's part of the fortune, the bottom of the pyramid. There's a lot of those people out there. So this lady turned me on to two campers. I got her number. So I'm going to just stay in touch with her. And now the guy that showed up, now another audio that I often play on here is the Nine Friends. I'm not going to play it today. But the Nine Friends thing where this Mexican guy, this Latino guy, you know, the dude that kept his appointment yesterday came through last night, or early evening. It was still light out. Latino. And he told me how to dramatically cut my cost on building a tiny house. So, and he's interested in my carport. Okay. He's got a camper. So I'm looking at, I originally advertised for a vacant space in my backyard. And, you know, for some people I might throw in a tent. You know, but after this, you know, after the Saturday and after the conversation with this guy in person last night, okay, you know, it that's where I'm going. So I've got another two ads. I'm going to probably eliminate one and tweak the other one because, now I can see this, man, I've gotten inquiries from people from, like, the state of Maryland. They're moving down here to Florida, and they're trying to find an affordable place where they can put their RV. I've got the space on 4 acres. So the ad that I'm going to eliminate, because I've got one ad where it didn't advertise for – hunters, but I got two type of hunters that want to lease the land. One, they want to hunt for deer, but it's only 4 acres. So, and I got to check with the, but in, even if the locals say it's all right, but from another guy, I don't think it'll fly with the locals. So, but, you know, I don't want anything killed like that on my land. And other people are people that want to do bow and arrow type stuff. But, you know, I like deer, so I'm gonna eliminate. That ad wasn't advertising for hunters, but when they see 4 acres for lease, but I, you know what, I'm gonna take that. I'm just gonna deal with campers or people that need a place to park, or if you need a small house or cabin to rent, or if you need a room. And the rooms that we'll be doing will be rooms not within houses. So that we're going to tweak towards that and then basically just keep something going 5 days a week, 52 weeks out of the year. And then right now I can handle, but I can tell pretty soon I'm going to need somebody to help me fill these inquiries or whatever. But the Laura Nelson thing, I mean, hey, people, like I said, I didn't advertise for it, but that's who's calling. I mean, that's who's sending me texts, DMs, and that's who showed up last night. So I'm gonna stick with that. I'm gonna stick with that particular niche. And my goal is to do one a day, Monday through Friday. So I'll go back to look at these two athletes. I'm gonna eliminate one, and then tweak the other one I got. Now, like I mentioned earlier, yesterday Facebook, around about this time, because I was working on an ad, because typically when I play that Factory City thing, that long audio I play, what's going on at Yupa in China, I'm working on something. So I was working on the two ads yesterday, but as soon as I finish, I don't know what time I finish, then the laptop that I'm on right now started acting up, and then this Facebook just went off. I mean, disappeared off my laptop. So I'm thinking, because I just placed the ads, so I'm initially thinking, well, maybe it's something I said in the ad that I didn't think I wrote anything controversial. It was a basic ad. Or maybe I clicked the wrong button, whatever. So I went to my phone, and I wasn't having much better luck with the phone, although it hadn't disappeared. But the instant messaging, and then some of the things that I sent out, people didn't respond to. So long story short, Facebook, Instagram, WhatsApp app, T-Mobile, and some of your local telephone providers or communication providers around the country and maybe around the globe had issues with outages. And around here, Facebook really didn't get back to normal until about 7:30, 8 o'clock. Not about 7:30, 7:30 here. It was still daylight, but it was around dusk when things got back to normal. So I went back in and tweaked my ad, and then people started to inquire, like my Friday ad, which that, like I say, that had, I deleted it just to keep up with the number of people that did inquire. So, and then now you got a whistleblower that's apparently on Capitol Hill right now. And some people want to break up Facebook. I just got another inquiry. Okay, let me respond to that. And let's see, I don't know this person. Okay. All right, so there are people that for whatever reason trying to break up Facebook. Because me personally, I really depend on Facebook for a variety of ways. I mean, and to be honest about it, it's some people's way of communicating, their preferential way of communicating. I've got certain people, the only way that you're going to reach them is through Facebook Messenger, point blank. There are other people that prefer Instagram. There are other people that prefer WhatsApp app. So some people are old school, and they prefer to talk by, landline numbers. So there's we're living in the age of mass communication. So but Facebook, you can do, though banking through Facebook. I mean, it has a payment system, systems on it. Anyway, so you got one person that she's a whistleblower with Facebook. There'll probably be others that come out against Facebook. If you got any comments, 619-768-2945. I can't prove it, but there is such a thing called corporate espionage. I mean, she probably could have been high. I mean, she probably got high. Here's my theory, and it's just a theory. I cannot prove it. There's a saying, the nail that gets hit, or the nail that sticks out gets hit. Facebook is a nail that sticks way out because of the size of the company. I mean, over 1 billion people use it every month. I mean, that's a good percentage of the planet. All right. So my theory is, and once again, I can't prove it, is that the haters out there that want to take down Facebook for whatever reason, they probably had a number of people that applied for jobs at Facebook. And let's put it, I don't know how many employees that Facebook has. Matter of fact, let's see if we can look that up right now. Facebook, let's see if we can find that with Wikipedia real quick. Okay. And it was founded 2004, so it's not that old. Okay. 159.32 billion in total assets. Over 29 billion in net income. Number of employees. Facebook has 60,654 employees. So here's my theory. Can't prove it, but here's my theory. Under the banner of corporate espionage. So you got some people out here that want to take down Facebook by, well, I'm not going to say by any means necessary, but let's say they organized or got at different phases. And let's say not all of these people they probably don't even know each other. But let's say 500 employees, somehow they got maybe 500 people hired at Facebook over a number of years. And remember, Facebook has got over 60,000 employees. So they sent God knows how many, 500 of them, let's say, got hired. So let's say they sent out 500 of them and 50 got hired. Or even 1%, 5 got hired. So you got 5 got out of 500 that applied for jobs at Facebook, okay, only 1% of them, 5 of them got hired, okay. But they're five moles. Once again, this is a theory, I can't prove. And one, stays there for a little bit, and it, knows how to, at least her division of the company runs. And, of course, now they've had an action plan, they hook up with 60 Minutes or the press, and it's convenient that they do the 60 Minutes piece with the whistleblower thing. And that was just this weekend, at least that I saw it. I don't know how old it is. They get the 60-minute piece with the whistleblower, and then today's Tuesday. How come then they had the outages yesterday with Facebook WhatsApp app. Facebook has an interest in that. Instagram, Facebook has an interest in that. It's very convenient that that happens a day after the 60 Minutes piece. And then it's really convenient. That's today's Tuesday. We're talking about 1, 2, 3. Okay. Now we've got testimony up on Capitol Hill about Facebook. Real convenient. Once again, I can't prove it, but the optics look bad. That's why this alleged, in air quotes, whistleblower is full of shit. That's just my take. Can't prove it. I never even applied for a job at Facebook. I'm assuming she's fired now or no longer with the company, but I'm just saying the optics look bad. Whatever she's talking about or testifying about, I don't think it's credible. But, hey, I'm just one person on a planet. My mission basically is to stay in my lane. I'm having success with three ads. I eliminated one yesterday. But I want to narrow it down where I concentrate on just three items. And I want to repeat those three items on a daily basis until I've repeated it successfully 200 times within a calendar year. So that's where I'm at. All right. But Facebook played a big part of that. In any event, 3:14, your mic is open.
Well, you know, the thing with Facebook that makes people so angry at it is cancel culture. And you a user of Facebook who have consideration, you should get on them about that.
You know, because, you're right. We're living in cancel culture era. You're right.
Yes. So everyone has a part to play, you would think. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily, but they should. Facebook will allow people to exercise their free speech. Mm-hmm. Facebook don't want to consider itself as a public accommodation, just like AT&T, where you could tell a person, say anything to them.
Right.
So that's the problem. And you see that Facebook is working and did work to try to keep competitors from coming forth and taking advantage of the opportunity that the fortune at the bottom of the pyramid talks about with
right.
social media sites like Gab.com, FreeTalk.
And you know what they did, Priyanka? You bought this up several months ago. I'm just thinking about it as you're speaking. They banned President Trump.
Well, absolutely. I ain't got to that. That's absurd. He's a citizen that has the right to. They didn't ban Barack Obama. So when they do things like that, you begin to understand and see exactly where they're coming from. Give a person a little rope, and sooner or later, they will get to the end of it and hang themselves.
No, you see, you're right. You're right. It caught up with them. Or it's catching up with them. It ain't over yet. Good point.
Yeah. Absolutely. And when people have different opinions about vaccines, they always want to check you with a disclaimer, a statement, asking you to go research this because what you're saying has been compromised by another source. And then mm-hmm. at some point in time, what they've been proposing turns out to be just false. And also, L.A., you should let those people hunt on your property, man. What they're doing is trying to put food on the table.
Well, now, I got to check on that, Pianki, because, you know, I got to eat the rules.
Well, I know
a guy that in the same county, he's got a 30-acre tract that people hunt on, but mine's only 4.
Well,
so a guy I was talking with this morning.
Deer's running through your property is what they're doing. They're transversing your property to get from one place to the other.
Yeah.
And when you hunt any animal like that, you always want to put yourself where you can catch them when they go by their normal path of transverse.
Right. Well, this is new to me, this part of it. So,
hell, I used to hunt rabbit, deer, put rabbit on the table for meal.
Yeah,
it also helps to keep the population in check, too, because if the population get too large for a given area, then you start having problems. Just like they do down in Texas and some other states where you had these problems with these wild boar.
Mm-hmm.
You can plant a crop, and the wild boar come in and root that damn crop up and cause all kind of havoc. And they multiply like rabbits. You got any wild boar on your property?
No. Deer, I'm assuming rabbits, although I haven't seen it. I've seen plenty of deer, though, that all through
mm-hmm.
that area. And in parts of that county, they say bear, but none of the people I've talked to around my four have sighted any bears. And every time I go up there, I haven't seen any signs of bears. But in that county... Yeah.
Are you up in the northern area of Florida or southern area?
Yeah, I'm 29 miles from Valdosta, Georgia.
Yeah, well, you may have
some
bear. You may have some bear.
Yeah, they say there's bear in that county. But in this particular region, well, section. But
you know, bear will migrate from one place to the other. But I don't think they go too far down south Florida because of the water level, the water table.
Right. Well, I know. Now, there was another, where was I? In Central Florida? Not dead center Central Florida. I was at some state park where they had, you know, signs that bears are in the area. And even
mm-hmm.
the trash receptacles were built to withstand bears wiping at it. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
But now I was there during the daytime. My whole thing about nature is nature will see you, although you don't see nature.
Mm-hmm.
But I haven't seen any bear signs up where I'm at, where this 4-acre tract is. But I've read in that county they're bear. So, but you know.
But you know, too, building a pad and installing some electric outlets and probably a septic tank dump, you probably could do some RVs and RV
camp, too.
You
know, Bianchi, I'm going to have to do that because a number of people that inquired with, particularly today, you know, early morning hours and all that. I can tell, you know what? I'm going to have to put something up there just like you said because if it's, you know, that's what they want.
Yeah, you know, you got, and I also have something for motorcycles too because I used to travel all around the country on motorcycles.
Okay.
And one place that we could camp is in those rest stops.
Right.
And we'd take our tent out, put the tent up, rest, sleep.
Yeah, I'm going to have to put a septic system in and
yeah, commercial
some
step.
People, Yeah, go ahead.
And hire a local company to come clean it up.
Right. Well, yeah, that's what I used to work where I'm at right here, but this is more residential. But, yeah, I got a lot of inquiries on does it have electric and you had a number of people that inquired, but there were more people that, all right, let's go where the market's at. They want water, they want power.
Electric
so
and power. Then probably
yep, those
the ability.
Are two things.
The ability to empty their tanks. But you know that at those rest stops they have facilities so you can empty your tanks too.
Yeah, dump stations, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Dump stations. So
all right,
it's
so now you're transitioning your land where it can be either used by hunters or recreational park for, let's see, what do you want to call those things? Mobile homes. You're going to build.
I got a lot of inquiries. That's probably number one for RVs, may as well say. Campers.
Yeah, then you
go. I got the most inquiries, and all of them were, you know, people from out of state that are moving down here. They're just finding it difficult. And then some people that are already in a place, they don't like the atmosphere or the cost, or so they're looking for a less expensive place. So I probably got more inquiries for that than anything else.
All right, so you're doing those two things. Then you're trying to build a mobile home for RV, turn the RV into a tiny home. You're trying to build a tiny home.
Well, I'm only going
to
keep it, this particular parcel, I'm not trying to develop a park or nothing like that. It'll just be where I can maybe three or no more than four. You know, I don't want it crowded or whatever. If you got just three or four.
Well, they
got
to call you and see if you're open. They would contact you and see if you got room for one more, if you got room.
Well, I never thought about that aspect of it.
All right, now you got those things, hunting, RV, parking. You got turning a
camping.
Camper. You got turning a camper.
Tent camping.
An RV into a tiny house. You got building a tiny house and putting it on a trailer. You got building a tiny house in a stationary place. That's five things that you're supposed to be doing. What else you doing?
That's enough right there.
Yeah, so we've been doing. I'm waiting to see which one you're going to get finished.
The first one that will go will be, based on the conversation I had last night, will be a camper. That'll
all
be
right.
The first thing. And, matter of fact, I got to call him at the.
How much land, how much space
park
you got for the campers? You probably have to park 12 campers.
No, I don't want 12 on there. Oh, this one is at a separate location here in Lakeland. Up there, I'll probably put no more than two campers, and then I'll reserve one space for a small tiny house cabin. And I might do two, but that's on 4 acres, so I'll have them separate for each other. I'm putting no more than four on that particular lot.
Yeah, you got to have electric put in. And the water and the sewage. You have to hire somebody that's going to have to be there to check people in and check them out. And you got to have a maintenance person that's going to stand by in case something go wrong. They can be called up to come over and reset circuits or whatever. You also could have one for cars. A car park where people can come and rent out a cabin.
Now, I thought somebody I talked to about a week ago, there are quite a few people that have cars, but, I know some rest stops on the interstate, you can't sleep there anymore. It depends on which one. I haven't been on the road like that in a while.
Well, I don't understand how that's going to work. Hey, people, that's why it's called a rest stop.
Yeah, because truckers do it.
People take
a
nap.
Truckers do it. Yeah, truckers
you
do it.
It must be a rich. It must be a blue state.
Don't know.
Hey, you're supposed to pull off to the rest stop and take a nap so you don't run off the road.
North Carolina is the, and Beasley would know something about this. North Carolina, I think, is the only state, at least that I know of, where you can't sleep at a rest stop, and that was due to the Michael Jordan when his dad got killed. Now, I don't know if that's
that was Michael Jordan's
dad. Because on 95, and 95 passes through North Carolina. Because I've slept plenty of times on 95 in a car.
Well, I guess we have to pull off on the Walmart lot.
Well, you have quite a few people that do that. And I had a call Saturday from a person I couldn't help. And he's living in the parking lot, so he says, of a Home Depot. But he needs a social worker. I can't help him.
Then you're going to have a restaurant there so people wake up in the morning and walk over to the restaurant.
Well, now, they can drive,
drive
10 minutes to a
restaurant. You want them to do it there on your property. You know? Make a room for a restaurant, and they can come out and eat breakfast. That's the way they do in your Holiday Inns and your Quality Inns.
Well, that's
inns.
What they do with and they do it with IKEA. They
yeah.
feed them. All right. Oh, you know what? Note it. Have something in
every
where they
morning.
Eat.
You can go down to the lobby and you can eat some cereal. They got some toaster pancakes, fruit,
mm-hmm.
juice. Go back, finish packing your luggage, and be ready to check out at 11 o'clock in the morning.
I never thought about that because I've stayed at places that offered a. I've stayed at hostels, two of them, that they offered complimentary, what do you call it, continental breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
I stayed at a Hilton out at the airport in Tulsa. Same thing. You just come down in the morning, and they, you know, what do you want, waffles or scrambled eggs or whatever, and that was all part of it.
Well, you know,
so,
it's similar like they have in some places. I've been in Africa. Like
mm-hmm.
in the Gambia, they got a area. I can't think of the name. I never could think of the name of all these different places. But, oh, they had it in Egypt, too. They have these cabins. In
mm-hmm.
Egypt, they're a little bit more modern size. But in Africa, they have these cabins. That's what you call them, cabins, individual units. They got the beds, the bathroom, and... you know, you got a central location where you go do your check-in, you eat, your restaurants, your dining, and when you get done, you walk down this path, go to your individual cabins. It may be rows of cabins. You know, I've sent you pictures of that one little community in Texas
mm-hmm.
with the monolithic domes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so they're arranged like that. That there is very popular because people look for something individual like that to stay in.
Well, the breakfast thing, the meal thing, all right, that's a solid idea. But the first thing is, like I said, I got to call this guy back and get this closed because, as Quincy Jones said, it's not a deal. Well, what's that saying, my mother? Everybody's heard it. Don't count your chicks until they hatch. So this looks
and then
like
you
it's
know
going
what
to hatch.
You know what else you can offer? A little laundry mat so people can wash their clothes out.
I got to take out a notebook listening to you. Wait a minute.
Yeah, they got to have a laundry mat where they can wash their clothes out.
Because I know when I was at a Motel 6 when I was visiting Taft once, I had to use that. They had a laundry room, a laundromat, like you said, right on
then
site.
You're going to have a little PlayStation for the kids so that they can burn off some energy. You might want to have a little wading pool. or people can get in the water. If they going to stay there more than one night, they may be wanting to stay there for 3 nights or so to kind of rest up, to get out of the monotonous job of driving. Since they got a camper, they can't be driving to town, so you want to have stuff there convenient for them so that they can, like you say, eat food, eating breakfast, lunch, probably a dinner. So you're going to have a restaurant of some capacity.
Community center.
You might need some entertainment. Bring Robin over and she can sing.
Robin, you still it? Robin, she's got one of her phones on. Robin, press 1 if you're on that extension and see. Well, it's a Washington State extension. Entertainment.
You're going to have some have pamphlets printed up that you want to you want to disseminate to the RV dealers where they can probably put a booklet in every camper that they sell.
RV dealers market.
You can make your cabins like little timeshares. But don't have it where a person can't get out from underneath the contract. That's evil there.
Right.
Yeah, so Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid. You know the thing is about that book. It's a good book. I read it.
Mm-hmm.
And it talks about
many
things.
Yeah, I
got to
hear the house plus I became a, what was that dude's name? Prohalitz's last name.
Yeah, Prohalitz, something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
P-R-A.
I used to listen to his videos on YouTube. And it just dawned on me there's a fortune at the bottom of the pyramid over here, too.
Right. Because everybody at the bottom is looking for something to do, and they poor without different expressions or innovative minds. But as you start working up that pyramid, you start getting in a realm where it's very, very few. You know, that's what I tell young people. Like I told my grandson, and my kids do the same thing, is that you want to get away from that bottom and work your way up to the top. And you do that by qualifying yourself for a variety of things. If you're a doctor, then you may want to get a degree in mechanical engineering. If you got a degree, if you're a doctor, you may want to get a degree in law. You follow me?
Mm-hmm.
So when you get up to the level on that pyramid where doctors, and you got those other qualifying traits, you just continue to move on up the pyramid. And when you get up to the apex of the pyramid, it gets smaller and smaller in surface area, and you find yourself with less and less of people to compete against. But those down the bottom is going to need your service. If they didn't need your service, that would mean that they had the same qualifications and capabilities that you do, but they may not want to do it for whatever reason.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why that book is very interesting.
Yeah, I consider it a classic.
There's another one called written by Hernando de Soto. It's called The Mysteries of Capitalism.
The Mysteries
very
of Capitalism. By de Soto.
One of my favorites.
So the Mysteries of Capitalism.
One of these days I might write a book, but I doubt it.
You should. You can probably do a documentary.
So there you are. Let me see. How you can utilize that land. Of course, having
excellent ideas and that simple.
Hunters ain't gonna want to pay you because they ain't got the money to pay. They out there trying to get food. But those other ones, how you can turn your land into a income producing, nice income producing venture, and the money you derive off of that, you can buy some more land. And some more land.
Well, I done took notes on everything you just said. I got it written on the envelope. On
and see, when you buy land, you don't want to buy land in the hood, which you could, and sit on it. But if you buy land, you want to buy land in the way of development, in the way of progress.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why I come in many cases, buying land will become a long-term speculation. Because the closer
well,
and closer
this,
the
this
development
is located,
gets to
too far from the interstates. It's not far from I-10, not far from I-75, and it's about 90 miles away from I-95. It's got a state park
long.
About a 10-minute drive from it.
That's a whole nother hour. Now,
you know
state
what,
parks usually have those things too, don't they? Those conveniences.
The state park near me, I mean, at least that location, their attraction is, as I've been to it once, is they've got this spring there where people can go swimming. I mean, the water is, if I wasn't there to see it, I would swear somebody airbrushed the picture. But I saw it in person. It's just a clear blue aquamarine, real pretty color, and people go swimming in it. And then, you know, people also bring their bottles. I mean, they got springs here where people get water and all that. So that's about 10 minutes away from
you near any lakes?
Front part of this property.
Or a river?
They got some lakes up in that neck of the woods. You know what? I just found the dude. I got an audio by the guy who wrote C.K. Prohalet. That's his name. Let me play that real quick, and I'll come back to you.
If you look at the four driving forces, in addition to globalization, for the first time in human history, 3 billion people are connected. In 5 years, people expect 4 billion people to be connected. That's going to make a big difference to how companies operate. The second, digital technologies are becoming extremely inexpensive. For example, the cell phone is only the starting point that you can get a cell phone for $30. But you can also get 16 gigabits of memory in USB for less than $20. So the costs are going down dramatically. And this means technology does not differentiate any longer between the rich and the poor. The poorest people can have exactly the same technology as the rich have. Maybe less bells and whistles, but the same technology. The cell phone is just the starting point. And then there is convergence of technologies. The cell phone is a phone, it's a computer, it's a map, it's a watch, it's a camera. So all these technologies and businesses are coming together. And finally, I think social networks are becoming extremely important, like Facebook, MySpace. So if you take these four drivers, connectivity, digital technologies, certainly convergence of technologies and industries, and social networks, coupled with globalization, is going to fundamentally create new opportunities and new ways to compete. So the substance of the book assumes these driving forces and then asks the question, how would the poor and the rich markets change dramatically? And therefore, how do we create value? That is the core substance of the book. If you look at what the heritage of most companies are, I say, let's go back to Model T. If you look at Model T, it was totally vertically integrated. You put iron ore on one side, you get cars on the other side. All the resources required to create the product was within the company. And more importantly, it was an undifferentiated consumer base. That's why the famous one-liner from Henry Ford, any color car is okay as long as it's black. That's our heritage. No company operates that way today. But that's our heritage. That's where we're coming from. I'm going to the other extreme. If you can think of one consumer experience at a time, even if you have 100 million consumers. For example, Google has 100 million consumers. But I can go to Google and construct my own page. It's called iGoogle. So it is one personalized experience at a time. And a more important part is none of the content in Google is produced by Google. So all the content comes from outsiders. They aggregate it and give it to me. So one consumer experience at a time. And in order to serve that one consumer, you get resources from around the globe. This is very different. It's 180-degree different from Model T. So I call this N equal to 1, one unique personalized experience. And or the resources are global. This is very different from vertically integrated, undifferentiated consumers. That's where the world is going. And that is true whether you're in Starbucks or you're Apple. Apple, you can create your own music portfolio, but Apple does not create the content. Neither does Apple produce the device. The device is made in China, the displays come from Japan, the semiconductors come from South Korea. They're all put together. The software is owned and the design is owned by Apple, but that's about all. So it's R equal to J, one consumer portfolio at a time. You make your own portfolio of music. So this is happening not only in what I call the new age companies, Google, Apple, Netflix, and so on, but also old age companies like in tires, insurance, automotive, and healthcare. So that, I think, is the new approach, N equal to 1, one personalized experience, and resources from around the world to make it happen.
Okay, so that was C.K. Prahalad, author of the book. He's a Passover, but the classic book, I highly recommend that you get it. The Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid. And he's got a number of videos on YouTube, which I'm going back to review those because I'm looking at it now, is... The Fortune at the Bottom of the Pyramid right here in the United States. But good person to listen to. Anyway, that's the one clip I had of him on. I've had that in there. I covered that probably some years ago. I forgot when I covered him. But that's a classic book, as you already know. Matter of fact, you're probably the only other person I know that's read that book.
Well, yeah, it only makes good sense, and those opportunities is what you see more aspiring nations get involved in. Another book called Tribes talks about how Tribes by Joel Kuklin, how race, religion, and I think it's culture defines success. It talks about different groups, like the Chinese, the British, and others that have took on those positions of commerce dominance, practice those positions of commerce dominance. You know, Chinese go around the world and set up a camp, and they will use that to sell stuff that they produce and make at home.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for instance,
well, you know, did you read John H. Johnson, the late John H. Johnson's book, Succeeding Against the Odds? That book, you ever read that one?
I read something like that, but I don't remember the author.
Yeah, he mentions in the book just what you said. He says he gives the example of a lot of, you know, the Italians and other ethnic groups in this country that basically made their fortune in this country.
In certain areas.
Well, you know. Exactly.
Yeah, like the Italians in building construction, they made their fortune in cement finishing, pouring concrete.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
he goes back to what the Italians, you know, just with Italian restaurants.
Yes. Practically every ethnic group is going to bring their cuisine to wherever they are.
Right.
Because that's what they like to eat.
Exactly.
Africans come to this country, they don't want to be eating no damn soul food. They don't eat soul food.
That's true. I know, like in D.C., I don't know how it is in St. Louis, but in D.C., like, you know, you go down, let's see, U Street, they got some Ethiopian restaurants. The Adams Morgan section of D.C., you see Ethiopian restaurants, West African restaurants, and then some right outside of D.C. in Silver Spring. You see some more, mostly Ethiopian restaurants. But you're right, a lot of people come and they want to eat what they eat.
Absolutely.
And then they commercialize.
You don't eat Chinese food, neither.
Well, yeah, Chinese
no, they may do it.
Food they sell us, they don't eat it.
Yeah, they may do it for novelty, but
right.
They don't. Yeah, African that I know of, they don't eat Chinese food. Ethiopians don't eat West African foods, neither.
Mm.
I don't know if you knew it because Ethiopians got some dishes.
I did not know that.
I really don't care for the dishes, but they, you know, in order to enjoy something or experience something, it's cool.
Mm-hmm.
But to be able to eat it two or three times a week is something that I wouldn't care for doing because I just don't like, I just ain't used to it.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it's there's a lot of food, different foods out there, I know, like I say, the Chinese food that they serve us Americans, the people that cook it, they necessarily don't eat that. They eat something that they're, you know, their palate's more adjusted to. And then, you know, you go to different parts of the country, and then, you know, they prepare foods differently. So, but in any event, we'll see what's happening with the. I'm glad you brought that thing up with Facebook. They're getting some of their comeuppance, I guess, because they did censor Trump. They've thrown a lot of people. And what I don't like about, because I got kicked off of Facebook like twice years ago, and I would always inquire. All right, who made the complaint? You will never get an answer back, and then you're dealing with Jan or one person. Yeah, so it's like they had this final say on it, but fortunately, I haven't been kicked off of there in many years. So
yeah, see, Facebook
I don't know
what
get
away
I
with
doing.
A lot of stuff. They monopolistic.
Well, yeah, it's like. If it's like they have the ball, and if they can't play,
well, it's because politicians. Now, this is a federal. Well, states have the ability to restrict them too. Mm-hmm. Be truthful with you. Just like countries, some countries don't allow Facebook in.
Yeah, some countries don't even allow them in. You're
just
right.
Just like some countries don't allow Walmart. You know, Walmart's been trying to get in Africa for a long time. They
did not know.
Went to the extremes to hire. Black salespeople or black representatives to try to go into African countries.
Mm-hmm.
And being that they think that skin is kin, try to negotiate ways to do that. Now, that has worked in other industries like oil with Jim
mm-hmm.
Simmons and others, but some countries like don't allow faith. China don't allow it to come in. China has very high censorship on its internet.
Right.
Africa should, but they don't do. Africans produce, like in Nigeria, they produce more porn than anybody else because it's a way to make money. Yeah. It's a way to make
Nigeria's
money.
Nigeria's got over 100 million people, so. They got the industry there, I guess, including porn. I didn't know that. I used to watch, or every blue moon, I'll watch Nigerian movies, not porn, right on YouTube.
Yeah.
Dramatic scripts.
And they was good, too, and clean.
Right. Good scripts. The cinematography might not be on par with Hollywood, but that's okay. You'll get entertained.
Like
and
the
I
twins.
Noticed, like,
Little, you ever watch The Little Twins?
Them no, actors? I'm not familiar with them.
Oh, they very funny. They grown, but they look like kids as far as being
dwarfs.
Oh,
you know what? I probably have seen them. Hold on. Let me go here right now.
And they got clean. They have clean, what we would call clean, family appropriate types of plots.
Mm-hmm.
You very seldom see something that's, you know, that's totally like you see The Wire and the gangsters and stuff. You very seldom see anything like that.
What I like about Nigeria's film industry, and I might have to cover that one day on here.
And Nigeria's film
Nollywood.
Industry is, yeah, Nollywood is bigger than Hollywood.
Yeah, exactly. And what particularly every year when the Oscars come out, and let's say few or no blacks get nominated, then my whole thing is, you know what, Nigeria and I think even Kenya, they have their own film industry. You know, look at these people that sit up there. I mean, you don't have to be begging. I mean, Hollywood's not the be all and end all.
Well, Africans, some countries ain't gonna allow American characters, American actors to come in to that. Like they like to come into, you know, see, African actors don't usually want to come into American film. Now you got blacks in Britain that's trying to do it, like you've seen them play some of these American characters, which I'm totally against it. I think those characters should be played, given a role by those of that particular culture.
Right,
because
like you said, with The Wire, the guy who played Stringer Bell, Idris Elba, he's a Brit. The guy who plays Franklin Saint in the TV show, what do you call it? Snowfall, he's a Brit. Nigerian Brit.
Yeah,
and then there's a number of white actors that play.
Yeah, stay over there where they come from. And see, the problem is in Britain, there ain't too much history, content, historical content that they can play the role of because they ain't been there that long. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
You don't have a historical presence as broad as we have in the United States, well, you're going to have very, very little content in order to make movies off of where you are characterized in Britain and surely in other countries too. So I'm against, and see, you have blacks in America who always have been marginalized. I'm against those that come from outside and not part of the historical record taking on those roles. Leave that roles along to black people in America, native blacks. Because native blacks ain't going to go to your country. You know why? Because you wasn't able to do it in your country you come from. You born in Britain or you migrate to Britain, well, do it there.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing, in the same area with scholarships, how they sneak in and get involved in scholarship participation for scholarships that was specifically for black Americans. And there's a lot of them. They publish a book on it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? You understand where I'm coming from. Because what you do is you cutting out from your child. If you got a group, and you got a group here in the United States that's called Black America, well, you're trying to project them and push them forward on up the economic classification. Now, you know who don't want them to go up there quietly as it's kept? It's your politicians. Because your politician is specializing in those areas that soothe and sustain them at the economic level that they're in, and that's poverty.
Right.
That's true.
I mean,
just think about
it. I noticed in just on a sports level, like in Germany and the Philippines, when it comes to their professional sports teams, particularly basketball or soccer, Some teams don't allow any Americans in. Every member of that professional team has to be a natural, you know, either born in the either Philippines or Germany, or Germany's a little bit more liberal, but they have a limit. But in the Philippines, in their professional basketball league, some teams, the only American they might allow in is if one of your parents and you're half Filipino. But full-blooded Americans, they don't allow one in. I mean, some of those teams don't allow them in.
And I think that's an appropriate way to do that. Same thing in the African, blacks in America always saying they're African, but they're not. They ain't African. They're American.
Right.
And Africans will let you know, but you can't go over there and work in business. They don't allow it. They don't allow they don't allow you to go in and solo a company neither. In many places. Now they allow you to partner. And in many cases the indigenous person has to have the majority shares of the company. But as far as you coming in there solo and just anything you want, just not something small, like a little shop or something like that, that's cool. You ain't going to bring your own people in there and work. You ain't going to bring your family in there and work. You're going to hire the people locally.
Right. Well, Africans, in my opinion, particularly from countries like Nigeria, or hell, anywhere, really, there are a lot of them are very sophisticated business people.
They very, you're absolutely right. They've been doing it for a long time. They ain't going to marry no black American over there. Now, they come here and they may marry, but they do that for an underlying purpose, really.
Right.
But, and, you know, you even have ethnic, you have groups there. For instance, I've talked about this a while, that Yoruba won't marry Igbo and vice versa. And, of course, in anything, you got the left, right, and those in the center.
Right.
Okay. But generally, that don't happen. But it has happened, but generally it's not people usually marrying their own ethnic group.
Well.
Except in the United States where anything goes.
Practically, you're absolutely right. On that note, let me get back. I got to call this guy from last night.
I'll see you. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. On that note, everybody have a good rest of the day.